Thank you so much for joining us on Super Bracket Bros. My name is Jay, your host and your personal bracketologist. And as always, sitting across from me, I am joined by Elias Stokes, number one space boyfriend. How you doing today, Eli?
I'm really glad you caught me. I was in the middle of some calibrations, and you caught me right at the perfect time to do a podcast. So, but you know, right afterwards, I got to do those calibrations.
Perfect. I'm so glad you're able to take a minute away from your very, very important calibrations to join us on Super Bracket Bros.
Could you tell I scripted the shit out of that like hours before?
So is there like three notebooks filled with like that line scratched out and rewritten like over and over and over again?
Yeah, and I still fucked it up.
So welcome to Super Bracket Bros. This is the podcast where we have taken 32 fictional characters, put them in a tournament against each other to see just who is the best of the best. And today is a very special episode indeed. Joining us today, and you may have heard his wonderful laugh already, we have Dylan Wren from the Level Playing Field podcast. Dylan is one of the co-hosts there. Level Playing Field is really a great source for all your video game conversation between genuinely great people. In particular, if you want to check them out, their 50 video game questions is a great episode. He's a huge fan of all things Xbox, and we promise not to hold that against him here. Hey, you keep quiet over there. I'm doing an introduction, okay? This is important to me.
I don't appreciate those Xboxisms.
Includes Prince of Persia, Dark Souls, and most importantly for today, Mass Effect. Welcome to the show, Dylan.
Well, thank you guys for having me. It's fun to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. We are so happy you're able to join us. And how are you doing today, Dylan?
I'm not doing too bad. Can't complain.
Well, yeah, you're on your favorite podcast of all time. How can you possibly complain?
That is true. Listening to your guys' podcast, I didn't think I would get a chance to like be on it. So it's kind of cool. So
welcome to the show. And thank you so much for taking some time to be here. But we have some business to get down to here. We're going to be talking about the aforementioned Garrus Vakarian, the 8 seed of the East, and we're going to see if he can pull off an upset against the number one seed returning character from last season, All Might, from the My Hero Academia.
He was on his revenge tour after losing to a fat panda.
Yeah, he may not be too happy with the outcome of last season, so let's see how he does today. Since we've got Dylan here, let's talk about Garrus first. And just before we get started, Dylan, you know, like, what is your relationship with Mass Effect? Like, is this like top 10, top 5 series of all time?
Series of all time, I put it in the top 5 series for me. I got the original Mass Effect when it came out originally on the Xbox 360 and played through that multiple times, even powered through the horrible Mako sections. And, you know, despite that, still played that game a bunch. Mass Effect 2 came out. That's probably in my top 5 games of all time. Played through that multiple times, played through all the DLC. And then Mass Effect 3 came out in college and really enjoyed it. I didn't have a huge issue with the ending. To me, it was fine.
That's what I was going to ask you about, to see what your feelings were, because I've been listening to some other people talk about Mass Effect specifically and the problems they had with it. And it seems like it was sort of in the moment kind of thing a lot of people had problems with. I didn't personally like playing like 2 and 3 back to back, you know, together, because when they actually came out for PlayStation, that's when I played them. So
yeah,
I didn't have a huge issue, but I'm right there with you. Mass Effect 2 is probably top 15, top 20 games for me as well. Like that's near perfection right there.
To me, the whole third game was just kind of like the culmination of all the stories. And so I kind of viewed the entire game as the ending and not just like the last 15 minutes of the game as the ending. I mean, at that point I had spent so much time with Commander Shepard, making him my own, that even though, like, I know one of the big things that a lot of people had issue with was like that you could kind of just choose the ending, and they were like, well, that doesn't make sense. It should be based on all my decisions. And I was like, well, I've made all his decisions, so I kind of know what he would choose in this situation too. So
right.
But yeah, no, I love these games, and like I was a little disappointed. I don't know if you guys keep up with a lot of video game news. We do that for our podcast a ton, and so recently the EA event happened, and I was a little disappointed that there was not a Mass Effect remaster announced during that. So
I mean, everything's getting remastered. How is like not one of the most popular series of all time getting remastered? Because
yeah, EA seems to be doing everything in their power to just sort of put Mass Effect under the rug after Andromeda.
Yeah, which is fair. Yeah. It's fair.
Yeah. And especially like, who even knows what BioWare is doing with Anthem now? Like who, like it seems to be a whole mess over there. But we're going to be focusing on what they did right. And one of the things they absolutely got right was Garrus Vakarian. Now, we were having this discussion off mic a little bit, but like both Eli and Dylan, is like Garrus your favorite Mass Effect crew member, or, you know, like top five? I mean, at minimum, it's top five.
You could have like two characters with you at all times, but really for me, it was you could just have one character with you at all times because Garrus was always in the other slot. So it was me, Garrus, and then a rotating cast. You know, I like Tali, I like Thane, I like Rex and Grunt, but Garrus was like the constant in my squad.
Eli, you were pretty much the same way ish.
Yeah, I think Legion is my favorite, but Garrus is either three or two, because like you said, Dylan, he's your ultimate wingman.
Yeah,
he's always like, it's the most bro thing to have him with you, and then go to that Citadel, you know, shooting cans off the Citadel.
Yes.
No, Garrus is top three, easy.
So we've got plenty of Garrus love on the podcast today, and he very well might need it. So in case you're unfamiliar, for now, speaking to the listeners, the Mass Effect is a series of games that takes place in a universe where humanity is one of many species. Garrus is a Turian. It's sort of, he's got avian features and a really like tough exoskeleton. One of many species that live in the Milky Way galaxy, and you play as Commander Shepard, the leader of a crew, and Garrus is part of that crew. The main focus of the game is to stop this super race of aliens from annihilating all life in the galaxy called the Reapers. And so really, but like that's the goal, but really the game is about building these relationships and great character development. And that's why like I could list all the characters from pretty much all Mass Effect 2 and 3, and I don't really have a problem with any of them. Like, at bare minimum, they're decent characters.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about a little bit where Garrus came from. So the person that's really credited with developing the idea for Garrus is Mac Walters. He's worked on every Mass Effect project there was. He works for BioWare to this day as a creative director. He was the head of Mass Effect Andromeda. At the time of Mass Effect, the first Mass Effect, he was a senior writer and took the lead on characters like Garrus and, or not Rex. And for the 2 and 3 versions of the game, he acted as a lead writer for both games. And the original art concept, this is the only thing I could find, for the Turian race was done by artist Brian Sum. And the voice of Garrus was Brandon Keener, who has, you know, many TV and video game credits underneath his belt. And including probably the biggest thing you might actually recognize him from is The Purge Anarchy, which was the second of the Purge series back in 2014. Have either of you guys seen this movie?
I have, yeah.
Okay. He was not Garrus at all in this movie from what I remember. Was that his
credit in the
not Garrus? Garrus. That's his credit in every single thing that is in Mass Effect. he was part of a couple that was going grocery shopping to get ready for the Purge, and their tires had gotten popped or their engine was messed with, and they couldn't get home before like the sirens went off, and so they were just kind of running around the city scared shitless the entire time. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I realized that that was the voice actor for Garrus, I was like, this is a waste. Like, what is what is happening? Garrus, you know, has been put together by a lot of different people. So let's talk about sort of what makes Garrus great and kind of go through. So let's start with Garrus in Mass Effect 1. Now, Mass Effect 1, this is sort of a blind spot for me in the Mass Effect. I never actually played the first game because of everything horrible I heard about the actual gameplay. And I was like, you know what? This comic at 2 is working for me. So what was your like experience like first meeting Garrus? Like either one of you.
When you meet Garrus in Mass Effect 1, the first thing it's right after like the kind of opening to the game where you fight what you assume to be a rogue Spectre, which is Spectre's kind of like their ultra special forces kind of troops. And so you end up going to like the central hub of the galactic government to kind of be like, hey, you know, what's going on? One of your agents was like killing people on one of our planets. And so you are kind of exploring that area and you kind of bump into Garrus while you're there. He's also investigating the rogue agent Saren. He works for, I guess, what's called Citadel Security, which is kind of like the, I think you have it in the document here, as space police, which is basically exactly what it is.
That's basically
he's space cop. And so you kind of bump into him and kind of work with him to, he's got a lead on somebody he thinks can help. And so you kind of work with him to figure out, like solve that lead and follow it down. And after that, he's kind of, the main issue with it is that he was investigating this case, but because Saren is special forces, everything's classified. And so he can't actually, like, he keeps getting hit with dead ends. So he kind of gets a little burned out with like all the bureaucracy and red tape. And so he's like, well, hey, I'll, you know, if you're going after Saren, I'm going to join you, if you'll have me. And I don't know what kind of monsters would say no to him offering that. So
that's the thing. I was looking at Mass Effect 1 and the story of Garrus, and I saw that you could actually just continuously say no to Garrus. Like, he keeps asking you to join and you can actually say no to him. And I was like, but why? But like,
it's so cool. They have a stipulation in the second game when you meet Garrus, and it basically says like, oh, I've heard of you, Commander Shepard, as like a, in case you haven't recruited him kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
And like, and you know, like them recording that line was like, we have to do it. It's for the 1% people that like that didn't like recruit Garrus in the first game. Like, we know it's a waste of time, but we still have to technically do it.
All those completionists out there for their YouTube videos have to do something.
Yes, exactly. Because that's the only way anybody actually experiences. I don't know if I would have the heart to say no to Garrus in any incarnation.
No, not at all. Well, and like in Mass Effect 1, it's, you didn't have a ton of companions either. It was, I'm trying to remember, but it was like 6 maybe at max. So I'm like, why would you shut down one of those? Because
we have Space Cop gone rogue, essentially not gone rogue, but you know, like it's done with the bureaucracy of CSEC. And then we get Mass Effect 2 Garrus, where now instead of Space Cop, we get upgraded to Space Batman.
I was hoping you'd say that. I was to say.
there's no other way. This is the perfect description for Garrus. So Garrus, at the end of Mass Effect, he goes back to CSEC and essentially gets ultra fed up with them and then moves on to Omega, which is basically a crime world.
It's Space Detroit.
Yeah. Yes, he goes to Space Detroit and becomes Space Batman to take down space criminals.
Exactly. Thanks for reading my fan fiction.
And this is really where I think Garrus makes the most interesting turn, because like he just goes full, like, not just like, and I mean, Batman, I think, implies that like he was just a straight up good guy, but like he was just murdering as many criminals as he could.
Yeah, it's almost like Hawkeye, or not Hawkeye. Is it Hawkeye from Avengers?
Yeah. Like in turns, Endgame? Turns Ronin. Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's what I kind of like about Garrison the first and second game is he, like, Commander Shepard, you can choose Paragon or Renegade options, but there's almost a mini Paragon Renegade storyline with Garrus. You can either persuade him to be, no, you should try to follow the rules, you know, be merciful, follow the law, or you could start leaning him, no, just, you know, do what you need to do. And that sort of culminates with his personal mission, that eye for an eye mission, where you can either convince him to gun down a remnant of his past, or you can encourage him to forgive the person. So it's this interesting, that's what I've always loved about Garrus, is that little mini conflict of the Paragon Renegade within a different character.
Yeah, because that's something that BioWare loves to do kind of in their games, is have that one character who kind of mirrors your progression as a character. You know, if you're being the Paragon or the good guy throughout the game, it's, you know, they'll continue to kind of make those decisions and lean that way. But then you can also go the other, like the sort of enemy route, and they're still on board with it. They're like, okay, I'm in this with you to the end. So
and so then we have Mass Effect 2, assuming Garrus survives the suicide mission at the end, which if he didn't, you almost certainly, you know, reloaded, but exactly. assuming you have a heart and he survives, we have Mass Effect 3. And so at the end of Mass Effect 2, kind of everyone goes their separate ways again to try to get their respective places ready for the Reaper invasion. And Garrus heads back to his home planet of Palavin.
Yep.
And heads up the Turian Reaper Defense Force, and eventually you head to that planet and once again recruit Garrus to your team. I think the only thing, the last thing I wanted to mention is give a shout out to the romance between female Shepard and Garrus. So I didn't, like, I knew he was an option to romance, but that's all I knew. Like, I didn't know anything about it because I'd never played female Shepard. But like in the past week, I've been watching, like, I think I watched about 100 different YouTube videos with Garrus in the title of it. And one of them was like romancing Garrus. And I don't know if either of you have played female Shepard or watched these videos, but Garrus is like, it just blew my mind. Like,
I did some FemShep runs, and I always romance Garrus because, like, that was one of the best romances because he is just so awkward and dorky. Yes. Like, you got this badass, you know, cop, you know, borderline specter, vigilante, murdering, like, hero, but then he can't, like, he has to tell awkward jokes and he's stumbling his words as he tries to bring you wine, and it just melts your heart.
Yes. Oh, Garrus is, it's just so, like, it's just, it's so perfect. Like, that's just like the one last, like, part of Garrus I didn't know I needed until 2020. But like, I'm so appreciative that it exists, and
that's
that I know
Garrus,
it exists in
the
world.
That's the Garrus you need for 2020.
Yeah. 100%.
Hey, I brought wine, best I could afford on a vigilante salary. If you were a Turian, I'd be complimenting your waist or your fringe, so your, hair looks good, and your waist is very supportive. Hopefully that's not offensive in human culture. Crap.
Whoa, consider me seduced, smooth talker. Now shut up and stop worrying.
I've seen so many things go wrong, Shepard. My work at CSEC, what happened with Sidonis. I want something to go right. Just once. Just.
Okay, so we've chatted about Garrus. Now let's hop over to the number one seed in the East. We're going to be talking about All Might from the My Hero Academia universe. So, Dylan, what is your experience with All Might, or specifically My Hero Academia?
Yeah, so I watched the first season of My Hero when it was like coming out, but when I finished it, season two had not been like localized, and I'm probably going to annoy some of your fans, but I'm not going to read it. I'm just going to watch it dubbed. And so it hadn't been dubbed yet, and so I haven't caught back up. I know it's out now, and I need to actually like sit down and continue watching it. But I really enjoyed the first season, and like I know a lot about it just because like within my circle and everything, like people are talking about All Might constantly. One of our other hosts on our show, Andrew and Caleb, are both big fans of My Hero Academia, and so I've heard them talk about All Might, and just, you know, having read things online and, you know, read things on Reddit about, you know, the character and everything. It's a really interesting character. I think it's a really good take on like the Superman type of character. Superman to me was always kind of boring because he was always just this perfect like
yeah
character. Like,
what do you mean, Mr. Newspaper Man?
Exactly. And so I think I really like kind of what they did with All Might in giving him like actual weaknesses that matter instead of like, oh no, kryptonite.
Yeah. Oh no, green rocks. Oh no.
So and just like his power is very interesting, and everything, like, it makes me want to sit down and watch more of the show for sure.
Yeah, no, and you know, obviously you've listened, so you know me and Eli are huge fans of the show, and we're all caught up and everything, so we've got plenty of All Might experience for everybody in the chat. So so let's break down All Might a little bit. We talked about him, and again, you know, if you want to hear us talk about more about All Might, you can head to our All Might versus Poe episode from last season. You know, that was a really tough match that I would highly recommend. So let's chat about All Might and like his creation and things like that, just like we did for Garrus a little bit here. So we have My Hero Academia, we mentioned, and is an ongoing manga. It appears in the weekly Shonen Jump since July of 2014. It was adapted to an anime television series starting in 2016. In this superhero world, nearly everybody has a quirk, which is essentially just their word for superpower. The series itself follows Izuku Midoriya on his journey to become the greatest hero in the world after All Might passes his quirk onto Midoriya. Season 4 of the anime recently finished a few months ago, and the manga is ongoing. So the creator of All Might and all the characters from My Hero in the series is Kohei Hirakoshi. He is the, you know, like I said, creator, writer, illustrator. He has many inspirations that he's pulled from a lot of shows that a lot of people have watched: Naruto, One Piece, Western superheroes like Marvel and DC. And specifically, you know, if you look at All Might, I mean, he's got red, blue, and white all over him. You know, he's a very American hero.
Oh, really? You know, you're the guy with the Detroit Smash and the New Hampshire pile driver.
And so we have his voice actors. He was voiced by Kenya Mikaia in the original version and by Christopher Sabat in the English version. And Sabat is actually also the voice of Vegeta in the Dragon Ball series and Zoro from One Piece. And now I have a bit of trivia for you, which I know all our fans have been asking for more trivia. So this is going to be surrounding All Might, but specifically his voice actor, Christopher Sabat. So a lot of voice actors, you know, stick to voice acting, but Mr. Sabat has appeared in exactly 2 live action films. And now I'm going to read off 3 titles of 3 live action films, and you have to tell me which one you think he did not star in. Okay. these are pretty prime movies. So we have the horror comedy independent flick called Lumberjack Man. He played Shep, a park ranger, and that's from 2016. We have the direct-to-video film Chuck E. Cheese in the Galaxy 5000, which he played a reporter in 1999. Or is it the direct-to-video comedy Upchuck 2, semicolon, Chicks Love Chuck, as a comic book store employee from 1998.
I was hoping the third one would be, you know, not dog shit, but that might narrow it down. But
did you think I was going to say Avengers Infinity War 2018?
It's going to be more well-known movies.
Oh, no, God. Absolutely not.
All right. What do you think of Dylan?
What was the first one again?
The Lumberjack Man. It was an independent horror comedy flick. He played a park ranger.
That sounds so normal.
I think I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah, I'm going with that one too.
You would be incorrect.
Oh, damn.
He was indeed a park ranger. It's so funny. I checked out his Twitter and someone like added him and was like, is this you? And he was like, yes, everybody, if you want to see me play a fat park ranger with a terrible, terrible mustache, then check out Lumberjack Man. No, the one was the Upchuck film or what? I already forgot the name of it. Upchuck 2, Chicks Love Chuck. No, that was an original title creation by myself, Jay Davis. So
I'm impressed.
It sounded so real.
Well, see, I realized afterwards maybe I'd give it away by having two titles with Chuck in it, with Chuck E. Cheese and Chuck 2, that you would figure out I made up one of those. But I'm glad my deception succeeded. I'm sorry everybody that had to listen to that, but that's what you get at Super Bracket Bros.
This is Super Bracket Bros. You get Mass Effect fan fiction and shitty trivia.
That's why we keep coming back though.
Thank you. We genuinely appreciate it. So My Hero Academia, let's talk a little bit about All Might, where he came from, and where he's headed in this series. And so in the first season, you know, I mentioned it before, he is the mentor of Izuku Midoriya. He's the constant presence, you know, he has passed on his power to him. Mm-hmm. And so he's really, it's like, it's all about Midoriya, but really it's also about All Might learning to become a teacher and a mentor as well. Dylan, do you remember the fight at the USJ between All Might and the Nomu, the hulking black
yes.
bird creature?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, perfect. So yeah, that sort of ends the first season, and really it's the first, like, we get it, like, All Might's strong, like, he's just like, I mean, you just look at him, he's very imposing.
Mm-hmm.
But like, when you see that fight and he defeats somebody that is literally designed to take every punch from him that they can,
mm-hmm.
you know, it really makes a point of talking about how truly strong All Might is. And
yeah,
you know, and during that fight, he actually becomes more injured. He, one of the biggest things, and Dylan alluded to it before, but that makes All Might intriguing, is that he's constantly dealing with this abdominal internal injury where, like, most, I think he says most of his insides are missing. I mean, does that sound right, Eli?
Yeah, something along those lines. I think half his stomach is gone, like, probably a few kidneys are missing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so he can only maintain his power form for so long. And during the first season, it's about 3 hours, and then it gets reduced to 1 hour. And then in the third season, he has his huge fight with All For One, which is essentially his arch nemesis, mm-hmm. The most powerful villain in the series. And so that's kind of really the last big moment we see from All Might. But really, yeah, we get a lot of great moments where, like, he really naturally became a hero. You know, it's quoted in the series that as soon as he inherited this power, he was able to go 100% immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And now he has to teach Midoriya, who's struggling so much to be able to use this power. It really creates an interesting dynamic between the two, I think.
Yeah, it's not just like a chosen one, you know, gets superpowers right away and knows how to use them. And so that's kind of the thing with All Might, is he has to leverage, like, solving Izuku's problems for him or trying to let him figure him out on his own. And that's an interesting dynamic that plays into his whole, you know, he is weak. Like, to give you reference, because all his insides are missing, he keeps coughing up blood.
It's definitely played for laughs, but yeah, like pretty much whenever he overexerts himself in his like his true form, I mean, he's like he's not doing so hot. Like it's like you look at him and you're like, how is this dude even standing upright? You know, like, but he goes from that to his muscle form where he is able to punch the air and create thunderstorms.
Yeah, Jay, that's run-of-the-mill for anime. Like, what?
Yeah.
See, that's the thing I keep going back to is like I like My Hero, and I'm happy in my Hero anime bubble. Like, I don't need to be exposed to your One Piece. I don't need to be exposed like to all these other crazy shenanigans that are out there. Like, I'm very content in my little superhero bubble right now.
Well, I mean, I love All Might sort of for the similar reasons as you guys stated. He's just Jay and I were talking about this before the recording, but when the manga writer was pitching the idea of All Might, people were giving him a hard time because, like, oh, a character that's always smiling, that's kind of, you know, goofy, no one's gonna like that. But that's sort of like, All Might is the symbol of justice in this universe. He always needs to be smiling because that's what inspires hope in people. And so that's such an interesting facet for his character, who's so hamstrung by his inability to stay 100% all the time. So no, All Might is very, he's not just the tropey like Superman like Dylan was talking about. He's a pretty damaged individual who's learning that he's like basically becoming obsolete and has to pass on the torch.
Young man, I came here to thank you, and also to discuss your question from earlier. If you hadn't told me about your life, if you hadn't run into that fight, I would have been a worthless bystander watching from the crowd. So thanks.
Oh, no! It was my fault he was there to begin with! I got in the way of your hard work. I wasted your energy, and not to mention your time.
I'm not done. You told me you didn't have a power. So when I saw this timid, quirkless boy try to save a life, it inspired me to act too. There are stories about every hero. How they became great. Most have one thing in common. Their bodies moved before they had a chance to think. Almost on their own.
For some reason, I remembered my mother's words in that moment.
I'm sorry, Izuku. I wish things were different.
And today, that's what happened to you.
You never told me, Mom. Back then, the thing I wanted you to say, the words I needed to hear,
young man, you too can become a hero.
So we've talked about All Might enough, and we've had another entire episode about All Might, so let's get into the fight here. So in case you haven't listened to any of our season 2 episodes, how we're doing things now is we are going to be randomizing time, place, and weather for each of these fights. So we have 100 different locations, we have 20 different weathers, we have 10 different times that the fight can take place. So this is just to add a little bit of spiciness to each of the fights.
It's gotta have this RNG.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm an XCOM guy. I gotta have my RNG, man. And so let's figure out where this fight's going to be taking place and when it is, and then we will move from there. So, Eli, if you wouldn't mind providing some dice noises while I bring up my random number generator.
Dice, 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 dice. Is this
okay?
Good? Dice,
dice. For the love of God, please stop. Please stop. Okay, I'm done. Okay. We have number 35 on the list. We are going to...
Nah, it's
Pride Rock from the Lion King series. Okay.
It's interesting.
He's in his natural Turian habitat.
Yeah. So we've got Pride Rock. It's going to be overcast, so we've got plenty of clouds. And it's going to be midnight. So, oh, and not just midnight. It's going to be a new moon. So it's going to be pitch freaking black at Pride Rock for this fight. No Mufasa looking on this fight. Like,
no, he's there. He's there. You just can't see him. It's too dark.
He has cloud vision. He could see through the clouds.
Well, he is a cloud. Because he is Mufasa in the sky during the fight.
Okay, so we've got Pride Rock. We have our portals opening up. We have All Might getting dragged back into this tournament shenanigans, and we have Garrus Vakarian getting pulled from
in the middle of his calibrations.
So he's coming in hot.
Our gnomes are gonna pop through the portal and grab Garrus by like his armor and be like, okay, it's time to go. And he's not gonna go. He's gonna be late to the fight because he's gotta do calibrations. Okay. So we've got these two fighters, let's say on the rock, you know, at the where you know Rafiki holds up Simba, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Let's get into the fight. So like, Garrus is obviously like they don't start immediately next to each other. So Garrus is immediately like I feel like at an advantage for being an 8 seed. Oh yeah. Also, they can't see each other.
Yeah, well, so, that was something I was going to ask about, because Garrus has that visor thing.
Oh, he does. He actually has
his night vision.
I would assume as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've always been under the impression they made that to differentiate him from the other Turians, but I'm totally down with the night vision. That shit's dope.
Yes. There's no way Space Batman doesn't have night vision. There's no way. So he actually sees All Might. All Might's just like, okay, I know All Might's powerful, but he can't destroy the darkness.
Can he punch the darkness away? Well, this brings up a fair point, because so I think, you know, Garrus is obviously outmatched tremendously in terms of power. However, this is almost opposite levels of strategy, because in My Hero Academia, it's all like 100% all the time, destroy everything, not really strategy. Where Garrus, I think, might have the advantage in strategizing on the fly.
I think so too here, because especially given the circumstances, which I think have rolled Garrus's way pretty decently here, because I can't think of a scenario in which All Might has actually fought in the dark. I mean, like, I'm sure he has, like, he's the world's number one hero, but like, this is like something completely different. Like, we're talking about there's no city, which he like probably fights in 99% of the time. There's no lights, you know, it's and he's fighting an opponent that can shoot and see in the dark. And we also don't really have a reference for like what happens to All Might when he gets shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I think like Garrus is able to strategize, find some cover right away, and start taking pot shots at All Might. And so like once he starts shooting, like All Might will be able to determine Garrus's location. Yeah. But how many sniper rifle bullets to the chest does it take to take down All Might? I mean, like, I know All Might's crazy strong, but what does that look like?
Remembering the Mass Effect guns too, it's some sort of like accelerator gun. Like, it's not just like a sniper rifle as like we've got here. I think it semi works on like the same tech that they had doing the Mass Effect relays. Like, it's some sort of mass accelerator or something. I want to say.
Here we go. Weaponry slugs are fired via mass accelerator weaponry.
Okay. Yeah.
Can reduce large chunks of rock wall to rubble in a couple dozen rounds. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's also worth repeating that Garrus has armor piercing rounds, so even specially made, like, I'm pretty sure this shit could destroy tanks, like, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, well, the fact that it takes down, I mean, the best reference we have is, like, he does damage to Reapers, and he does damage to giant mechs, right? Like, that's probably our best frame of reference. Like, he is, Like, besides the fact that we all love Garrus, like, he's also an extremely effective combatant. Like, because, I mean, he's got a sniper rifle, he's got his assault rifle, and he's, like, he's got AP, he's got his shielding, he's got his kinetic barriers. But so now that we've talked about that, like, what we have to talk about, like, what does an All Might punch do to Garrus? Like, what does that look like?
Let's replay him sending Nomu into the stratosphere and right. have that be the point of reference. Yeah, I think a single shot in Detroit Smash, because the Mass Effect universe, while it's sci-fi mixed with fantasy, it's still pretty grounded. You know, like people aren't doing crazy shit like in My Hero Academia. So I don't think Garrus, I don't think he can tank like a full hit. Maybe like I can't even think of any, like, because All Might goes 100% all the time. I think any of those hits are good.
If he's throwing rocks or projectiles or something, I think his shields may, you know, help him there. But like hand-to-hand combat, no. He's going to get hit, and that's it.
Okay, so I actually have something that I found that I think is interesting in favor of Garrus here, actually.
Okay.
So Garrus has a kinetic barrier, right? Mm-hmm. And that's used to stop bullets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so the way that the kinetic barriers work is they don't work on melee attacks because the melees aren't coming as fast as bullets. But they do stop bullets because, you know, it protects against that high speed. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm willing to wager that an All Might punch is about as fast as a bullet.
Okay. Oh, I see what you're doing.
So I would almost give Garrus more than I think, like, the kinetic barrier takes, like, a hit or two, maybe. But, like, I don't think Garrus is down for the count immediately.
Yeah.
I do have to say, though, Garrus might sustain the hit, but how far is he flying? and into what?
Yeah, it'd be a real ugly scene if he just launched him straight into the rock and the rock just like tips over backwards.
But I could totally see an interesting scenario where Garrus is almost like, you know, maxing out his shield or something to get hit, and then like plants a sticky bomb or something, because he does have explosives. And then tricks, like, essentially traps All Might to have a bunch of explosives.
No, yeah, I could see that as well, because, like, I think he's fast enough, he's dexterous enough to be able to do that, right? You know, but, you know, Garrus, he also has reach, as we well know.
But
he may not have flexibility, but he's got reach, so I think he can get there if he needs to.
Well, okay, so I mean, we can talk about the damage Garrus is doing, but the trick with All Might is if you can last, like, if you wear him down, that's how you win the fight.
Yeah,
because unlike other fighters, All Might has a set like timer. Essentially, if you survive long enough, you win, because he'll be in that weakened form and he can't do anything.
Yeah,
it's almost like this fight in my head is almost playing out like Predator, where it's just this overwhelming force and these characters just baiting their time, essentially. And if anybody, you know, Garrus fought like, what was it, like a week against alone in an apartment against three of the strongest gangs in the galaxy, like if anybody's going to survive this, like Garrus is pretty well equipped for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, as far as Garrus can run, like All Might can get there or get ahead of him in a nanosecond.
Yeah. So it almost comes down to like, how quick does Garrus realize that shooting him is not going to win him this fight and he needs to like play a longer game, versus how quick does All Might realize he can just punch him, you know? Like, if like,
because I mean, it's also fair to say that like All Might doesn't go all out against all the people he faces, or else he'd be running around like exploding skulls Mortal Kombat style. so overall, like, I think Garrus maybe has what, like 3 to 4 punches, All Might punches in him, like that he has to survive. Okay, so All Might's got a lot of the advantages here. You know, he's got the straight up physical power, you know, his melee damage is incredible, you know, it's just sort of a matter of how much damage can he take before he has to go back down to his normal, like his depowered form, or can Garrus last that 3 hours? So I think, is there anything else we want to bring up before we kind of get into a decision making time?
Okay. One thing I did, because I can't remember if it was Dylan or Jay brought it up that, like, we haven't seen All Might take really, like, bullet wounds before. Mm-hmm. So I'm more so interested, how many bullets do you think, like, All Might takes, you know?
I think that's entirely dependent on where he takes the bullets. Like, I think All Might can take, like, an base, like, dozens of flesh wounds, like, pretty much no problem, honestly. But if he takes anything to a vital organ or specifically to his abdominal injury, like if it hits it just right, that could be a problem. Because you see when the Nomu punches him on that injury, like he has to take a beat. So
so if Garrus can like detect that with his visor, potentially, and target it as a weak point.
I mean, I'm pretty sure the guy could survive, like, getting, like, a lung taken out or something, you know? Yeah. So it's got to be, I mean, Garrus has got to hit that can. He's got to hit it on that first try.
Yeah.
If you shoot for the king, you best not miss.
Honestly, I think that's the situation that Garrus is in. How we go about deciding the winners on Super Bracket Bros is, well, now that we have three of us, each of us will just be giving a decision about who we think would win the fight, and sort of give an out of 10 based on how confident they are. But the out of 10 isn't going to matter because we actually have a tiebreaker now. It's not just me and Eli here.
Not just screaming at each other for 30 minutes off mic.
yeah, exactly. Eli, if you want to go ahead.
Garrus is the best. I love him. He's my bro. But it's I can't see him winning this fight necessarily, just because All Might is just such an overwhelming force. We kind of talked about in the previous episode with Mega Man versus Venom, where at some point, just an overwhelming force is just way too much. And this is probably the most overwhelming. You know, this is just pure power incarnate. And Garrus comes from a universe that isn't about that. He's more of a ground. He's more of a tactical fighter. He's a special agent. He's not, you know, you don't see, you know, Hawkeye fighting the Hulk, you know, it doesn't go well. So I see a very similar situation. I think the setting provided it interesting with the darkness. And I think that gives Garrus a bit of a favor with his visor and just tactical mind. And I like imagining him pulling out two wins, but I'm going to go All Might 8 out of 10 times. Just it's just too much power. I can't see if Garrus tries everything in his power. You know, he'll get those two wins, but, you know, the rest, it's just in All Might's favor, I think.
I'm as much as, same as Eli, as much as I love Garrus, and he is my favorite character in the Mass Effect universe, I am going to have to give it to All Might in this situation. Like, if Garrus had time to prepare and strategize beforehand, I think I could see him maybe being able to edge out All Might more times out of 10, but in like the situation first round, you know, just kind of going into it without really knowing about the other fighter and without, you know, being able to, like, All Might's quirk is not
bring a nuclear missile with him.
Yeah. Like, and it's not an obvious weakness either, you know, like unless you, like, I can see Garrus, I'm going to go with like 7 times out of 10. All Might wins it, but maybe 3 times out of 10, Garrus either, you know, finds that weak point on him or is able to maybe accidentally last 3 hours to the point where, like, All Might's weakness is kind of revealed. But kind of the way I see it is, like, he takes his first shot and then All Might's just there and on him for the rest of the match. And that's going to be really tough for Garrus to overcome there.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with you guys. I think I'm going to go 8 out of 10 times because I think exactly 2 out of 10 times, like, Garrus gets that hit either directly to All Might's injury or to some other vital organ that puts him down to a significant degree. So I'm gonna say All Might 8 out of 10 times, but I definitely, because Dylan, you're right, like, Garrus shoots once and it's a flesh wound. All Might's there. He's on top of him, you know, and Garrus has been thrown into the nearest ocean. Like, it, you know, so it goes, I think it, you know, like, it's credit to Garrus, and I think the situation too, you know, that gets Garrus 2 out of 10. But yeah, mm-hmm. I'll go All Might, and that's it. All Might has begun his revenge tour.
Everyone get the shirts. I did like, Dylan, how you brought up that whole Batman argument with, you know, Batman's the strongest Justice League if he has time. And that's sort of a similar situation, because we can't iterate enough how fighting three, like, of the world's, of the galaxy's most dangerous gangs for a week is probably the craziest shit you've ever heard. Like, so,
yeah. Exactly. And not to mention, like, this is the kind of opponent that, like, Garrus takes down with Shepard and another Mass Effect teammate. Exactly. You know, like, that's a really interesting conversation, I think, too. You know, like, seeing what a Mass Effect team could do against a hero like All Might. So, but yeah, All Might moves on. He, you know, 3 out of 3 in All Might's favor. He's going to be going up against the winner of next week's matchup. We are going to be discussing Samus versus Katara, in which we have another special guest plan. So make sure to tune in for that one. But before we wrap things up today, I just wanted to give Dylan the floor here for a second. Tell us a little bit about Level Playing Field and what you guys have got planned coming up.
Sure. So we are a group of 5 friends who talk about video games all the time. And so we figured we'd start recording ourselves, because maybe some other people might want to listen. In general, what we do is we kind of pick a topic and just kind of talk about that in general, like favorite characters from video games, favorite games of all time, all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, just kind of a fun, you know, broad topic. We're starting to do some more deep dives into more recent games, and older games too. I think right now we've got a couple of our hosts that are playing through The Last of Us Part 2. And so we're hoping to kind of put something up about that soon. But in general, we just kind of get together, hang out, talk about video games. We try to do it from a more, you know, down to earth, you know, not super engrossed in the video game culture. But also, you know, maybe a little bit more knowledgeable than your average person. It's kind of a nice middle ground, somebody who's a big fan as a hobby, but not, you know, like getting all the games for free and that sort of thing. And if you're interested in us, if that sounds cool to you, if you've enjoyed listening to me talk and want to hear more from me, give us, you know, check us out. We're, you know, Level Playing Field, pretty much wherever you can get podcasts. I think Andrew said we're not on Pandora yet, but we're working on that. But I think pretty much everywhere else, we would love to have you come check us out. You know, if you're looking for an episode to kind of jump in on, some ones that I think are good. We, like Jay mentioned earlier, the 50 video games questions, I think is pretty fun to just kind of jump in. You don't have to know a ton about the topic we're talking about or anything. It's just kind of us goofing around and answering a bunch of questions. And we recently just did another one of those. We found 50 more questions and answered those. And so that was pretty fun. Those are both probably good ones to check out. And then we've got a bunch that are kind of about specific topics that if you're, you know, interested in that topic, maybe check that out. Give us a listen. And if you like us, if you like what we do, you know, we'd be happy to, if you've got room in your life for another podcast besides Super Bracket Bros, you know, we'd love to be that. So we're there. We're on, you know, you can find us on as Level Playing Field Gaming on pretty much all social media. And we're slowly branching into YouTube as well a little bit. So
yeah, say, like, I've guested on your podcast before. It's a really great time. I think, like, the best thing about it is that it's approachable and, like, it's not dense like a lot of other, like, video game podcasts can tend to get by people that are in media or in the industry. So Level Playing Field comes out every Mondays, so I would highly suggest you check them out. And they do special episodes, like they did one for the EA Play event, they did one for the PS5 reveal. So definitely make sure to check them out. You know, they're really great bunch of hosts over there, and coming up with some great content.
Yeah.
But last but not least, I will mention to make sure to follow us on social media. We have an Instagram and Facebook. They're both at Super Bracket Bros. If you have a halftime suggestion, we take listeners suggested halftimes. Make sure to email us or DM us. You can email us at superbracketbros@gmail.com. And I think that about sums it up for us. Do you have anything else for the people, Eli?
Can I wait a minute? I'm in the middle of some calibrations.
Thank you so much for listening to Super Bracket Bros. For myself, Jay, and for Eli and Dylan here, remember, no true hero is a one-trick pony.
To hit a Batarian pirate squad. Very risky. This recon scout and I had been at each other's throats. Nerves, mostly. She suggested we settle it in the ring.
I assume you took her down gently?
Actually, she and I were the top-ranked hand-to-hand specialists on the ship. I had reach, but she had flexibility. It was brutal. After 9 rounds, the judge called it a draw. There were a lot of unhappy bettors in the training room. We ended up holding a tiebreaker in her quarters. I had reach, but she had flexibility. More than one way to work off stress, I guess.